Welcome to Forever Blue Shirts Radio, powered by ForeverBlueShirts.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Forever Blue Shirts Radio this week. Thank you for joining us. A little more of a somber opening this week. As a lot of you know, tragedy in the sports world this week. The shockwave is going to be felt for quite some time. Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna Bryant, as well as the family of John Altobelli, his daughter Alyssa, and his wife Carrie, were all involved in a helicopter crash in Calabasas, California this week. I mean, it's been really, really tough for the sports community as a whole, basically the world as a whole. I mean, it's rare that these types of things happen that you kind of, the world kind of stands still. And, you know, five-time NBA champion, 18-time All-Star, fourth all-time on the scoring list, the accolades, I could go on forever, but Kevin, JL, just give your thoughts on the Black Mamba before we begin here.
Well, I wasn't necessarily a big basketball guy, but if there's one thing that I could always respect is the influence and the power, I guess you can say, that Kobe had over basketball. I mean, he really did change the sport the way that it was, because he was a different type of player per se, in the sense of you didn't see many players with that kind of persona and that kind of skill. Now, I can't really say much else, but even as a casual observer, you knew who Kobe was. It's kind of like with when you look at hockey and you think of legends, you think Wayne Gretzky. When you look at baseball, you look at guys like Babe Ruth, or you look at guys like, you know, Barry Bonds or Sammy Sosa. You know, I'm relating to back in the day. And basketball, you had Michael Jordan and you had Kobe Bryant. And everybody back in the day had number 8 jerseys or 24 jerseys because he helped perpetuate the brand. And even if you follow basketball, like it or not, you have to appreciate the talent, the numbers, and just the style of play that he played. And, you know, you never want to see anyone and their family members go that young. And it's definitely sad to see. So my condolences go out to his family and to the families of the others that were lost in that tragedy. It's very unfortunate in the sports world, and his influence will definitely be missed.
Yeah, there's really not much like to add on to what you guys just said, except for the fact that, you know, everybody knew who Kobe was. Like JL said, I'm not the biggest basketball fan, but everybody knew who Kobe Bryant was. You know, it means a lot that a guy gets both of his numbers retired for one franchise, which is just insane. Usually just get one, but he was such a pivotal piece in winning championships and being, you know, that franchise player. He was at the time the youngest player to enter basketball. He was 18 years old and he just shook the foundation, and, you know, he always, you know, went in and did his best. Like, just reading articles, listening to guys talk about him, they're always saying like, oh, he always showed up early. There was one time that he called one of his trainers, and he goes, can you come to the gym? It's 4:30 in the morning. He goes through his stuff, and he ends up coming back at 11 and sees Kobe still going. And he's like, oh, what time did you get here? Oh, I never left. I'm still shooting my free throws and this and that. And just, you know, goes to show the amount of like talent and amount of perseverance he had. And he really had a big influence on a lot of basketball players, a lot of sports personalities as a whole. And it's just, it's really sad to see. And, you know, it just, he was 41, man. It's just tragic. He stopped playing basketball 4 years ago, which just, it seems like forever, but it really wasn't that far. But, you know, our condolences to everybody in the crash, but it's just, you know, it hits you. It hits you hard, especially when it's someone this significantly young.
So, like JL and Kevin said, our condolences go out to the Bryant and Altobelli families from all of us at ForeverBlueShirts.com. And with that, guys, it's time to get back to hockey. And let's, you know, Kevin, start us off this week.
Okay, back to hockey. I know it's a little change of pace, but we got to do it anyway.
We got to pay the bills. That's what's up.
Got to pay the bills. We got to appease the all-powerful Godfather. Thank you, Aunt, for letting us do this. again and forever.
Wait, by the way, just for the record, this podcast is powered by foreverblueshirts.com.
Yes.
Can't forget that.
Can't forget that. Just in case he didn't hear it seven times before this. So the Rangers are in a predicament, as we all know, with their goaltending. They have a logjam as well as expiring contracts and contracts that are essentially immovable. Now, the Rangers were kind of in this predicament once before with Cam Talbot. And the Rangers, I don't want to say messed up, but they really did mess up. They were greedy, if you want to just boil it down to that. So they were expecting a significant trade for Cam Talbot. He was young. He's showing the prowess that Alexander Georgiev is showing. And they waited till the trade deadline to trade him, because at the time, Cam Talbot was taking over for an injured Henrik Lundqvist. If we all remember, Henrik Lundqvist was hit in the neck that one year where he missed significant time. And, Cam Talbot had to step in, fill in some big shoes. And, he really did keep the team afloat and got them to the playoffs that year. But unfortunately, the Rangers bit off too much. I can't even say the damn phrase now. But you know what I'm saying. You all know. Thanks for helping me out, guys. Great. I appreciate the camaraderie. So they were looking for the perfect trade at the time. Glenn Sather was being extremely greedy. They had apparently multiple offers for first-round picks, apparently from Edmonton Oilers. And as I believe JL or I think it was Russ said, that it was the San Jose Sharks that offered him a significantly high first. But apparently Glenn Sather wanted more. And they really wanted that Islanders first-round pick, which just didn't go their way. I think it ended up being Matt Barzal that year, which just hurts even more because he's a stud. But, at this time, the Rangers really shouldn't look for a perfect trade. They should look for something that would maximize their team now. And it's looking more like Toronto is that trade partner that they can get. And you just can't wait for that blockbuster trade. You see a good opportunity. Obviously, they're not going to trade him for nothing, but they know Alexander Georgiev isn't here. Igor Szczerbiak is here this year, and he's going to be here next year, and there's no reason to send him down and risk him going back to the KHL for any reason. And at this time, the Rangers should really bite the bullet and take a significantly better trade instead of trying to go all the way down to the wire at the trade deadline or even the draft and hope that they get something better, which is just not going to happen. Now, you could couple people with him. That would be great, but you might not get a first-round pick for AG. You really might not. So at this time, the Rangers should just be smart, count their assets now, bundle whatever they can, and just get a good return for them. Not the perfect return, just a good return.
I like that because, sometimes people say the prices always increase going up towards the deadline and that you can probably get a better deal on deadline day. But at the same time, if there's a team that has a really good offer on the table right now and you can kind of end this three-goalie carousel type deal, like Kevin's saying, you got to take it, end the experiment, let Igor, start getting more of the starts, let Hank back up, of course, and have the two of them, going forward and let Georgiev have a real shot at being a true number one somewhere else. I'd really like that point, Kev.
Great. But go on, Russ. Tell me about, your opening statement, because it is similar to mine in a certain sense.
So sticking on the subject of trades, obviously, the Rangers' biggest trade trip going into this trade deadline is Chris Kreider. And, it's tough because, especially at the All-Star game when I was watching him do the fastest skater, it's going to suck when he leaves. I'm going to miss the guy. I know a lot of people don't feel that way, but it's going to suck because I'm going to miss him. I'm never going to forget when he came up in that Ottawa series in 2012 and, lit the playoffs on fire that year as a rookie. So I'm going to miss him, but it's time, as we all know, the Rangers don't want to pay the 7x7. It's time to go. So, pitting the contenders against each other, St. Louis Blues, the Boston Bruins, and the Tampa Bay Lightning are believed to be the three teams that really want Kreider to for that big playoff push to add him for the playoffs. And I came up with three optimal type trades. Since everyone's asking what's a good return, what can we get for him, what's something we could hope for. Well, these are three trades that, if everything kind of falls the right way, I'd really like to see happen. First, we're going to go to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it seems like we always trade with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But the Tampa Bay Lightning actually have someone who I would really love to see in Ranger Blue over the course of the next few seasons. So in addition to a pick, which would probably be a first from the Lightning, considering, you know, they have a lot of, they don't, I mean, it's going to be a low pick, so they probably wouldn't have a problem giving us the first. But the real prize here is the prospect from the Lightning that the Rangers would get, and that is Alex Barre-Boulet, formerly of the Drummondville Voltigeurs and the Blainville Boisbriand Armada, both in the QMJHL. He signed as a free agent with the Tampa Bay Lightning during the 2018-19 season. Actually, probably during the offseason. But Alex Barre-Boulet, for those that don't know, was a pretty significant scorer in junior. For the Drummondville Voltigeurs, his best season with them, he had 35 goals and 54 assists for 89 points in 65 games. For his final season in junior, he played for the Blainville Boisbriand Armada. And in 65 games, he had 53 goals and 63 assists for 116 points. And in the playoffs, he added 27 more points in 19 games. He's on the smaller side. He is about 5'10", 170, but he plays center. He's been tearing it up for the Syracuse Crunch the past few seasons. And he had 68 points in 74 games for the Crunch last season. And he has 40 and 43 already this season for the Crunch. So Alex Barre-Boulet would be the prospect I would target if I was Gorton from the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're in complete win-now mode. You know, I don't think they'd have an issue getting rid of Alex Barre-Boulet for someone like Chris Kreider, who has that big, you know, heavy body, and he has the speed for the playoffs that they would desire. Moving on to the Boston Bruins, an intriguing prospect that I think they should get back would be John Beecher, formerly of the U.S. National Development Program. He's currently playing for the University of Michigan. On the U.S. National Development Program, he was mainly in a 4th-3rd line role, kind of behind the really skilled guys like Jack Hughes and Trevor Zegras, but nonetheless put up some pretty respectable points in 18-19, scoring 15 goals and 28 assists in 63 games for 43 points. And this season for the University of Michigan, Beecher is at 12 points in 20 games, and he scored 7 goals to go along with 5 assists. Now, if the Bruins would give us a pick, I would like it to be a first, but Beecher is kind of a higher-level prospect. I think it would be a second or a third. Still, pretty quality return for Kreider. And finally, the St. Louis Blues, who have been rumored to be in on Kreider for quite some time now. And the Blues are a little more difficult because they don't have that one kind of elite guy that I think that, you know, the Rangers would really, really look for in a Kreider trade. But the two names I came up with is, one is Klim Kostin, and the other is Scott, let me see if I can say this right, I'm probably going to butcher it, but Perunovic, either way.
They both sound really good. You killed it no matter what.
Yeah, you Thank covered you. All your bases there.
Yeah, no, I read the name also. I was like, yeah, it could go either way. You're fine. You got it.
So Klim Kostin, very highly touted prospect when he got drafted a few years ago. 6'3", 212 pounds, winger from Russia, currently playing for the San Antonio Rampage as he's been for the past two seasons. Hasn't really exploded as the Blues have hoped, so he'd be kind of a project for the Rangers, taking him on hoping he could, you know, hit that ceiling. Whereas Scott Perunovic, undersized defenseman, 5'10", 174, but, you know, he's left-handed shot. And he has actually had some pretty good seasons on the University of Minnesota Duluth blue line, putting up 36 points, 29 points, and already a 28 points this season in 24 games. So I know, another defenseman, we don't need them. But remember, you can never have too many good defensemen, and maybe he makes someone else expendable down the line. So one of those two guys in the first from the Blues, I think, will be nice for Chris Kreider. So to recap, from the Blues, either Klim Kostin or Scott Perunovic in a first. From the Tampa Bay Lightning, Alex Barre-Boulet in a first. And from the Boston Bruins, John Beecher in either a second or a third. I think all three of those trades would be helpful to the New York Rangers. I think all three would benefit them in different ways. But if it was up to me, I think getting Alex Barre-Boulet would probably be my favorite out of these three scenarios.
Barre-Boulet would actually be a pretty decent acquisition. These kids stupid fast. I think he'd be pretty good. I wouldn't lie.
I still don't get people's bias against shorter players because most of the time they are quicker and harder to handle. I mean, obviously, if you have three tough guys right in front of him, he's not getting through him. But against a normal pairing defenseman, yeah, obviously that's with anybody. But yeah, but that's the exception that makes the rule. But he's got quick hands. He's small. We could see another Matt Zuccarello or Marty St. Louis or something like that. I mean, I'm not making any predictions, but
way to go, Kevin.
I can make predictions. I mean, I'm going to be right or wrong. How many times have I made a prediction and then I was 100% right?
I don't know. I haven't really kept track.
Yeah, now
you want to know what? It's 0%.
Okay.
Now I'm going to start keeping track because you said that. But
that's it.
You know, it's true. Some people have issues with undersized forward in today's game. But with the game trending so much towards speed and skill now, I think a guy like Barboulet, hopefully fitting into a middle six role on this team as the rebuild goes on, would be pretty special. But, you know, we'll see what the Rangers can get. As I said, optimal. So don't come at me on Twitter too hard if these trades sound too good to be true for us.
I mean, and, optimal being, like, kind of far-fetched.
This
is, like, borderline, like, the last day within, like, the last 2 hours. And, like, Jeff Gorey keeps, like, you know, you give me this, then you give me this, you give me this, 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 this.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And then he's going to maybe get, like, a first-round pick from the Colorado Avalanche.
We'll see, right?
Wouldn't be too bad of a thing, but. Sure.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't.
No, any first round pick included would be wonderful. And now JL is here to tell you why not to worry about Kaapo Kakko.
Thank you, Russell. The baritone in your voice makes my introduction so much better. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Be more monotone, JL.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
No, that doesn't mean lower your voice.
Anyways, Kevin Kroupy. Okay.
Tell us. Tell us why.
Okay, so the other day, right before the break, Kaapo Kakko, there was a piece done on Kakko by Larry Brooks of the New York Post, and this will probably be an upcoming post by myself for Forever Blue Shirts, and basically just talks about how the break will essentially do good for him. So if you already don't know this season, Kakko has played in 44 games so far in his first season, and he's only amassed 16 points. He's a minus 17, he's taken 12 penalty minutes, and he's got 2 power play goals, and he's got basically 5 even strength. So people are beginning to be concerned. And, you know, frankly, I wouldn't necessarily doubt, you know, people's concerns in the sense of, well, I mean, this guy's a second overall pick, and he's not really lighting it up. Well, to go back to the article, David Quinn compared Kaapo Kakko to Andrei Svechnikov of the Carolina Hurricanes. And if anyone remembers when we had our Angry Boss episode of the Forever Blue Shirts podcast,
that Russ missed out on all, like, the beratement and sadness.
Correct, which Kevin and I endured a verbal beating from our godfather.
I guarantee if he was there in person with us, he would have beat us up, like, you know.
Weeping, person, gnashing of teeth.
Anyways, old but, school style.
Yeah, with a paddle. But
oh, you got it weird.
But
I was just saying fists, and you want to bring out a paddle? Jeez.
I don't know how people are nowadays, but yeah. So I made the comparison of comparing Kakko to Svechnikov. Now I say that because I was having a conversation with one of our fellow contributors, Mr. James Van Casteren, as he's affectionately known. And we basically kind of...
Jimbo!
Basically kind of confirmed that he's going through the same trajectory as Svechnikov, you know. Played on the fourth line, didn't really produce much. I think, if I'm correct, from what I remember, in his first 50 games, Svechnikov only had 12 goals. Kaapo Kakko's got 44 games played with only 7 goals. So the pace is definitely, you know... on track. But here's the thing. Svechnikov started lighting it up for the Hurricanes in the second half of that season, and he carried that confidence into the following season, which is the player that he is now. He's basically one of the top forwards on that team. And if you look at the games that Kaapo Kakko was playing with the line mates of Hedl and Howden, you know, they're not putting much on the ice. I mean, they have terrible possession metrics, and they're not really putting up points. They've actually given up more goals against than they have goals for. But here's the thing. They look incredibly comfortable on the ice. Kakko is making good passes through defensemen. He's positioning himself in the right spot. He's back-checking, and he's forechecking strong. It's just a lot of it hasn't produced. But you're going to expect that from a kid who's only 18 years old and the rest of his line mates are basically young enough to not be able to rent a car. So...
I don't even think they can drink yet.
No, they can't. Basically.
I think Howden buys the beers, and
yeah,
that's it.
Probably.
Barely.
But either way...
Sir, can I see your ID? But I play for the Rangers, I swear!
Here you go. But no, but people are beginning to get worried, and I'll tell you this. Don't be worried. If Kakko doesn't have a breakout second half, that's okay. Because he'll already be acclimated to the North American game. He'll already be acclimated to the culture. You know, who knows what changes the Rangers will make from now up until next training camp. And who knows? Maybe by then, he'll be able to go through a whole summer, work out, maybe change his attitude in terms of, you know, conditioning and this and that and the fourth or whatever, and then he'll come back, you know, the player that we expect him to be. He's already showing the signs now. So there's no need to fret, because once he gets some ground under him, those legs, that speed, those skill sets that he possesses is going to come out strong.
Jail. That was perfect. Thank you,
Russell.
Because if I was,
I appreciate your validation there. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You got the Russell seal of approval.
Because it's so important to remember how young this kid is. And it's so important to remember, like you said, Jell, he's doing all of the right things. He's forechecking. He's on the puck. He's making the stick moves that, you know, over the past few games, you know, you can see the confidence starting to come. And it's great to see because of how highly touted this kid is, how much pressure is on his shoulder. And I think, you know, especially this break will benefit him. And even if he doesn't have that big second half, like you said, let him come back next year and really show what he's got. So I think that's, you know.
Oh, dude, you made a great point there, because David Quinn even praises the way Kako's been playing. He says,
exactly.
I wanted to move him up for so long, but I didn't want to really break up that line because they've been playing so well together. Now, whatever changed on that Islanders game, they played terrible. He moved Kako up, and he looked comfortable. He did great. I was at that game, no big deal. But that was a terrible game to go to. He did look comfortable. You know, he's still on that second power play unit, and he's going to be fine. If he wasn't playing well, you want to know where he'd be? The AHL. The fourth line, sitting his ass down in the press box. So just be happy he's on the ice game in, game out. He's durable. He's played a lot of hockey before. And he's just getting used to all the parameters and the day-in, day-out kind of grind. Movement with the team and everything. Yeah. Everybody's worried. Everybody wants to overreact, but you don't get 70 goals at once.
Yeah, that's kind of a New York mentality. And just to touch on some negatives.
That's an every team mentality.
True. But just to touch on some negatives and just on Kako, which are things that he will probably more than likely improve on, but just some things that he could definitely fix. He doesn't shoot the puck enough. He's shooting it more, but he doesn't shoot it enough. And he doesn't necessarily use his body to take it to the net. I feel as if he's not used to the NHL style of physicality just yet in terms of taking it to the net, because the minute he begins to really fill out in sense of, like, hey, I can do this, he's going to be a bulldozer, because he's already a bulldozer in the corners. But I think outside of that, he's more of a perimeter player for now. He basically is playing the same way Svechnikov played last season. But Svechnikov just ended up turning on a switch, and I'm confident that Kako will do the same.
Absolutely. I mean, we all want to see it. And I think Kako really will flip that switch next year and be start to be the dominant player that we all hope he can be. And guys, you already know what time it is.
Good grief.
Let's get a drum roll, please. Because this week, it's trivia hosted by yours truly. Hit the music. Guys, welcome to Trivia Round 3, hosted by me this week. Are you guys ready for some Rangers trivia?
No. Wait, before you start, apparently you need to explain the rules of trivia to everybody, because answering multiple choice questions, nobody understands, because it's not like we've been doing that since grade 1.
Is that a veiled shot at me, Kevin?
It is. I mean, you can explain the rules once, I mean, the first time we premiere it, but I mean, it's just like, you say the word trivia. It's either yes or no questions or multiple choice questions.
Before he goes into a rant, Russell.
I mean, it's already started.
So how is going to go? 5 questions and a tiebreaker. Let's see what these two boneheads know about the Rangers hockey. First question.
Oh, Jesus.
Which player was not involved in the Rangers trade for Eric Lindros in 1992? Remember, this trade was vetoed by an arbitrator, and Eric Lindros was awarded to the Philadelphia Flyers, but the trade was out there about who the Rangers offered. Is it A, Alexei Kovalov, B, Tony Amonte, C, Kelly Kisio, or D, Sergei Nemchinov, who was not involved in the Eric Lindros trade in 1992?
Kelly Kisio.
You sound so confident, but now I can't follow it up, because it's like, you're just going to bite off of his... You know what? You read that book, didn't you, JL? So I'm gonna go with that also.
You're both correct. The answer is C, Calicissimo.
Actually, you know what? I knew that because A, the mediator of that trade was none other than relative of Todd Bertuzzi, Larry Bertuzzi. And correct. I actually remember most of that trade from a documentary I saw. And Calicissimo was already gone by then. So
you're right, JL. Calicissimo was already gone. All right, so that was a gimme. That's
fair.
Okay.
JL is a trivia buff. And
hey, JL, smart.
I can't retain information past what I eat for breakfast.
You knew you were going to face JL. You should have prepared more, man. What could I
prepare
tell you?
For what? There's endless amounts of trivia.
I am the
How
Undertaker.
Old are the
Deal with it, my man.
Question number two. Prior to the 2008-2009 season, the Rangers played in the Victoria Cup Final in the preseason. Which team did the Rangers beat to win the Victoria Cup in the Victoria Cup Final? Is it A, Frölunda, B, Akbars Kazan, C, SKA St. Petersburg, or D, Metallurg Magnitogorsk?
Isn't that the preseason small little tournament that they did? Yeah, no, isn't it Frölunda?
Repeat the choices again.
Okay, is it A, Frölunda, B, Akbars Kazan, C, SKA St. Petersburg, or D, Metallurg Magnitogorsk?
I'm going to go with Frölunda.
I'm going to go Metallurg Magnitogorsk.
And JL has 2 points.
Yes.
It was indeed D, Metallurg Magnitogorsk.
You definitely chose that question because that name is ridiculous.
It is pretty ridiculous, right? What a name for a hockey team, right?
No, because they don't really play... That's a Russian team. They don't really play back then. They never really played the Swedish team. So.
Yeah. Okay. Question number three. Which season did the New York Rangers debut the white variant of the Liberty jersey? Was it A, 99-2000, B, 98-99, C, 2000-2001, or D, 97-98?
I think C.
97-98.
Kevin, what do you say?
I said C. I think 2000-2001.
You are both incorrect. The White Liberty jersey debuted during the 98-99 season, and that
was
the only year that they wore it.
The first season they tried that out, they made the playoffs with Gretzky, and then they debuted the white one after that. Crap, I was a year off.
Correct. So JL is winning 2-1 currently. Kevin, step your game up, my friend.
Hey, man.
Step it
Whatever.
Up.
Question four. How many goals did Pavel Bure score as a New York Ranger?
Total?
Was it A, 50, B, 47, C, 31, or D, 35?
47.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Incorrect, both of you. The answer is C, 31.
30? Really?
Really?
More than that.
That's
12 goals his first go-around with
40.
Us, and 19 the second season. Well, I thought it was more than that, too.
He came by a trade, that's why.
Hmm?
So he
came by a trade from the Panthers?
From the Panthers, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I loved him as a kid, but anyway.
Question five.
Good.
Okay. Which New York Ranger won his fifth cup as a member of the 1994 Stanley Cup winning team? Is it A, Mark Messier, B, Esa Tiikkanen, C, Craig McTavish, or D, Glenn Anderson?
Go through that again?
The question or just the choices?
Yeah. The choices.
Okay. A, Mark Messier. B, Esa Tiikkanen. C, Craig McTavish. Or D, Glenn Anderson.
And it's the fifth one.
Wow, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because Messier won the three or four with Edmonton, and then he won one without Gretzky. And then he won the one in New York. Crap. It all depends on how many did he win.
How
many
with...
did in Edmonton? Oh, my gosh.
Let's see, boys.
Golly, this is tough. Because they, you see, they all played together. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. They all played together.
Russell and his
sneaky ways. That's a really good question. I have a feeling this is a trick question. I'm going to probably get this wrong, but I am going to go Mark Messier.
Kevin?
No, Tegan in.
Kevin has tied the game.
Oh, yes!
Oh, man. Okay.
You said that, and I was like, it can't be Messier. That's bait.
The answer is indeed, Esa Tiikkanen won his fifth cup. He won four with the Oilers and the fifth as a New York Ranger.
So Messier has six.
Messier has six, correct. Okay. Gosh, so it is time for our, it is time for our tiebreaker
question,
my
friends.
Wow, the
one time the tiebreaker actually worked.
Who holds the New York Rangers record for most shorthanded goals in a season? Is it A, Michael Grabner? B, Carl Hagelin? C, Theo Fleury, or D, Mark Messier?
I think it might be Grabner. I'm going to go with A, Grabner.
I'm going Carl Hagelin.
Well, boys, you're both incorrect.
Well, the answer was Theo Fleury.
Theo Fleury.
I was
going
to say that. Unfortunately, no backup to the backup.
Actually, wait. Give me 2 seconds. Let me see. Let me see if I can think of one. See if I can think of one.
He's busting out the book.
You could do the low-hanging fruit and just do the number like I did last week.
No, that's too cheap. Come on.
And this might have been cheap.
That's too cheap. Come on,
efficient.
Kevin.
It's efficient.
No.
I think this is showtime at the Apollo.
Yeah, this is good content. Let the man find
something. Let's boo you off the stage, J.O.
Hang on. I think I got one. Just give me a second,
he's
guys. Give me 1 second.
You know, Mr. Krabs, you know, hanging around. while he looks, JL.
Yes, Kevin.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
About the Rangers.
Not like I don't have a choice.
Now, going back to Russell's, potential trades.
Uh-huh.
Which one would you say is the most realistic?
Probably the one that's most realistic to me is probably the one with the St. Louis Blues. I think Klim Kostin is someone who I think St. Louis is trying to move, and they're in win-now mode. So if you throw a guy like Chris Kreider on that team, they're a very slow team. And if they have a line that's somewhat fast, I mean, you see David Perron in the way he plays. You stick someone on that line who's really fast, Jaden Schwartz, you know, Justin Falk on the back end, Alex Pietrangelo.
Ryan O'Reilly.
I mean, Kreider will just be a force on that team.
You also got to think they still are without, you know, Tarasenko. Till probably April, which is still looking even late March.
But they're probably going to be in the playoffs already. So if you think
you have to supplement it. So they might not be as ready to, you know, give up anybody where it's like, oh, we might just get Tarasenko back. So if we make the playoffs, it doesn't matter. If we don't, no big deal. But
no.
Okay, boys.
All right.
Have your tiebreaker.
All right.
Okay. Which New York Ranger has the most even strength assists in franchise history?
Even strength?
Is it A,
assists.
Walt Tkachuk, B, Jean Rattel, C, Rod Gilbert, or D, Brian Leetch?
Even strength assists.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't find an easy one?
Nope.
Jeez.
This is just a shot in the dark.
No, it is. Gosh.
I might as well just go for the easy one.
Let's go Jean Rattel.
Okay,
I was
going to
go Brian Leetch.
Both incorrect.
Oh no. Don't tell me. Who is it?
The answer was
said
Rod Gilbert with 400.
Even 400. I like that.
You got to find another tiebreaker, Russell. Golly.
Okay, you know what?
Oh my God. This is going to go on forever. We have to have like a yes or no question. Whoever answers first, like buzzer beater kind of thing.
Okay. I got one.
All right.
He's got it. He's ready.
Imagine we both get it right.
Then that's it. No. After that, we end it. We have other stuff to talk about.
Okay. Final one. If you're both tied after this, I can't help you. Then we're doing the number thing.
Yes! The numbers! It always
works. Which New York Rangers head coach has the highest winning percentage in franchise history?
Oh,
is it A, Emil the Cat Francis, B, Alain Vigneault, C, Lester Patrick, or D, John Tortorella?
John Tortorella.
Alain Vigneault.
You're both wrong.
Oh,
oh,
come on. Oh
no.
The answer is Emil the Cat Francis.
The cat.
All right. Draw the number, Russell. Let's
I bet
go.
It was definitely like a barely a percent difference.
Okay. I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10.
6.
5.
It was 7. Kevin gets the win.
Yes! He gets the win! By sheer luck.
I think it's Rick. They both live in Brooklyn.
So, guys, thank you for playing trivia this week. It was a little crazy, but we got through it.
I guess we need like three backup questions.
Going to have it next week. All right.
Whatever, man.
Well, yeah. To get to our next topic, I think it's only proper that Kevin introduces it since it was his idea for us to discuss this, and it's something pretty powerful that I think we should share. So, Kevin,
go for it. You said powerful now, so now I have to like deliver a fantastic message to everybody. So, you know, we started off the show talking about Kobe Bryant and, you know, what he really meant to the sports world. And, you know, we talk about trades, we talk about players like they're commodities, they're not really people. And, you know, after a while, you have to keep reminding people, it's like, look, it's they're people, they're humans, they feel the same pain that you do. You don't want to lose them. They don't want to lose you. And, you know, I'm a Mets fan. I saw Wilmer Flores cry on Citi Field. And it was like heartbreaking because it's like, wow, this is the guy who grew up with the organization. He was here the whole time. And, you know, you look at this team or any team that you're fans of, whether it be baseball, basketball, football, hockey, soccer, whatever. And you build an emotional connection to the team when they win, when they lose. And sometimes you get mad at them. Sometimes you really want them to stay. And we see that, you know, evident during trade deadlines and, you know, off seasons is like, we need to re-sign Chris Kreider, or we need to keep Chris Kreider. We can't trade Matt Zuccarello. He's the heart and soul of this team. What are we going to do with Lundqvist? Oh, he sucks. Oh, he's great. You know, you have so many different conflicting feelings, but at the end of the day, they've given you memories, and they've given you, you know, long-lasting impressions of, like, you know, win or lose, they were part of the team. They were part of who you rooted for. You chant for them. You love them. You know, you essentially want them to be a part of your life in your team as much as possible, and you know, it sucks to build an emotional bond to someone that, you know, you don't really have a personal relationship with, but it really means a lot. And what a player really means to his team, his fans, and those around him, it isn't quantifiable. And a lot of people say, you know, just look at the stats, just look at the stats. It's just numbers, this and that. But at the end of the day, you know, leadership, you know, emotional connections. You know, we saw Henrik Lundqvist cry when Matt Zuccarello was traded. We saw Matt Zuccarello, like, devastated when he lost, you know, Broussard and Hagelin and, you know, all of his friends that he's made. And it's really devastating to see anything happen in the sports community as, you know, devastating as what happened with Kobe Bryant. But, you know, at the end of the day, these guys are human. You know, they're just as fragile as we are, and we put them on a pedestal. We knock them down from that pedestal. And at the end of the day, you have to just realize it's a game. They're doing a job, and, you know, they mean a lot to you. So you have to give them the slack and the, you know, the courtesy as they, you know, they give each other, they give the fans. And I think the bottom line is, you know, a player really means, you know, the team comes first for them, no matter where they came from. Their first team always means the most, and, you know, so on and so forth. But yeah. I don't know what else to say.
Well, to add to your point, Kevin, I was actually having not a conversation per se, but I was having a similar thought process over the last couple of days, even before this tragedy happened with Kobe Bryant. Because if there's one thing that people that I tend to do is I just like to overthink things, and especially when it comes to sports, you know, being at Mets Fan Fest at all and just really taking that in, you know, was also something interesting. But if you look at sports as a whole. Sports is something that generally people like to take part in to get away from the regular days or regular grind of life, you know. Personally, for me, the New York Rangers is an escape from reality per se. You know, sometimes after work, I would just buy a ticket and go to the Garden. You know, it was just when I was able to do that more often than not, I would be able to, you know, go and just escape for a couple of hours. And in that, we develop these sort of like, it's not a reciprocal relationship. I mean, I guess you could say it's reciprocal because you're going to pay for something and then you see them do well and that brings you something and then you give like cheering to them at the same time. But, you know, over the, you know, us as fans, we get happy with sports and we romanticize it a little bit in the sense of we kind of, like you said, put them on a pedestal. But again, they're also human just like us, you know. But that's not to underestimate the power or the influence that they have on a team and on the fan base, you know. You know, it's going to be a sad day when Henrik Lundqvist leaves the New York Rangers, you know. Many of us saw him from the start, you know, and a lot of people our age are really coming to grips with that, and they're starting to have a real visceral emotional reaction to it, you know. And when that day comes, you'll realize, like, wow, he really meant a lot to this team. But obviously there comes a time and a place for everything. So ultimately at the end of the day, you know, not only just with sports, but with just the people that we know and we love, we got to just appreciate what we have in front of us, you know, because you never know the next minute they could be gone, you know. I guarantee you in the next 5 years when Henrik Lundqvist ultimately retires in a time frame or whenever he does, you know, we'll sit around and we'll go, man, remember how good he was during the 2012 playoffs? Or remember how good he was and how happy it made you, you know? So when we look at players in sports, although there are people that put them way too high on a pedestal, we have to remember that they're also human and they go through feelings and emotions and they express themselves in certain ways. And we just kind of have to take that as part of the package when it comes to this kind of thing. You know, it's just something that we as humans have to appreciate, you know, that there's just more than just the person that we see on TV.
You kind of didn't believe it the first time you saw it because they seem immortal, but, you know, they're human. And, you know, just gotta remember that.
Life goes exactly. on, but the memory will never go away.
Now... Exactly. Now to something a little more...
time to make fun of ourselves because some of these predictions are really bad.
We made predictions 2 weeks ago for last week's
And a
games.
Lot of us were wrong.
I guess last week, 2 weeks ago's games?
It was about 2 weeks ago.
So we made a bunch of predictions on both the Islanders game and the Columbus Blue Jackets game,
so
which
bad.
Were just awful. Just to...
Completely wrong.
Here we go. For the New York Islanders game, I said the Rangers will face 42 shots. I didn't say what goalie would win, but I did say Panarin would get a goal, 4-2 win. We also said Kako would get a goal, Tony D'Angelo 2 goals, and Uyghur with a 45-save shutout. Jean-Luc Chaparro said 5-4 Rangers loss. Defensive turnover leads to the terrible goals. Yeah. Kako, Panarin, Tony D'Angelo, and Beadle all score. The actual score was 3-2, win, 40 saves, no goals for Panarin. Tony D'Angelo did get a goal, not
I got
two.
That right.
Sorry, Russ. Alex in net, not Igor. So technically, I think we all got a little bit, except for JL. JL, I think, only got the Tony D'Angelo, but that was stretching because he did 5-4.
Yeah,
so,
it's a stroke of luck, I guess.
It's an extreme stroke of luck. Here we go, next heartbreaking game. I said that the Rangers would lose to the Columbus Blue Jackets 3-5. Hank would be on the losing end of that. It was not Hank. It was Igor, unfortunately.
I was there for that. That was
Trouba would get a power play goal. It was Shea, actually.
It was coming out of the penalty box on a penalty kill, surprisingly.
Which, a great goal. And Tony D'Angelo had the same type of goal the game prior. But, you know, doesn't matter because we're wrong. Russ said 6-3 win, 35 saves for Hank. I don't know why we all thought Hank was starting. Oh, no. JL thought it was Georgiev.
I thought Georgiev was starting that
But Russell thought Panarin was going to get a hat trick.
I mean, it's not out of the question.
No, it happens. But, you know, you do 6-3 wins, anything's possible. JL said 4-2 win, empty net goal for Panarin. Georgiev starts and a faster, quieter goal. Igor was in net, we were all wrong. We lost 2-1, and Shea got the goal. Finally, the heartbreaking loss that I went to last Tuesday. I said that someone would get a shutout, 38 saves. I think I meant it was Igor, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And Filippito would get the goal, the lone goal. Russell said 3-2 shootout win. Igor gets 37 saves, and Fox gets the shootout winner. And JL said 6-5 win with Igor's first bad game, but still gets the win. OT with Strom, Panarin scores, and a rare Greg McKegg goal. All wrong again. We lost 4-2. Chris Kreider.
Not a good night.
Adel Buchnevich got very late goals to do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Boys.
Bloated our hopes up on that one. Good
grief. Russell, why did you delete what I wrote?
I didn't delete what you wrote.
It's good.
I didn't delete what you wrote.
I didn't delete it.
Yeah.
You're all liars. Someone did something.
Anyways, so we have three games coming up. We have the game against Detroit on Friday, and then they play them again in Detroit Saturday, and then Monday night they play Dallas at home.
So found it.
We're gonna have to make predictions. I guess I'll go first because, you know,
you're the only one who didn't write anything.
Well, you know, sorry. I think Igor plays. If you want to put that down, Igor will start.
You know, he's been starting for the, you know, past week, but whatever.
I want to say Kaka will score. Panarin scores. D'Angelo gets a point, and the Rangers win 4-2.
I like it. I'll go second here. I say it's Shesterkin to start. 2 goals for Panarin. Goal and assist for Kako. Rangers win 4-2.
I said it. Georgiev gets to start because they're feeling a trade coming, so they got to push him out as much as possible. Panarin comes back with 2 assists, but they do lose, and I will say it is a 4-2 loss.
Ooh, that's gross.
But no, don't worry. Let's do the next one where they go back to Detroit literally the next freaking day Detroit, which makes no sense.
Not like Detroit. So Kevin Barr.
I said Hank starts and is dominant. Only 1 goal against with 35 saves and a 4-1 win. Fox and Tony D'Angelo get goals.
I say Hank starts again. I agree with you, Kevin. I say Hedl 2 goals. I say Brady Shea goal assist.
Oh.
Rangers win. 7-1.
7-1? Good grief. Mm-hmm. What is this, NHL 20? Oh, man. I will say... this is an interesting one. I think Henrik starts this one. He usually plays well.
Jump on the bandwagon.
Of course. I gotta, you know, if I get a couple, you know, might as well. I think Panarin scores in this one. I think D'Angelo gets one as well. I'm all on the D'Angelo train here. Like, I think he'll score definitely way more. And I think Kreider...
You really want to rub it in our face that you're like, you should sign Tony D'Angelo to a long-term contract.
Look, I've been I've been on that boat since the start of the season.
we all know.
I'll say Panarin scores, D'Angelo scores. I think Kreider scores, and they win 5-3.
Ooh, I like it. And I'll start us off for Dallas here. I say, against the game against Dallas, Kako gets a hat trick, Panarin gets one, Zibanejad gets one, and the Rangers win 5-2 over the Dallas Stars.
Okay, JL's going to be there, so I want them to win.
oh, how sweet, Kevin. How sweet.
Georgiev gets a start. They win 3-2, a very close game. Chris Kreider with a goal and an assist.
I think Henrik Lundqvist plays this game. I think Henrik Lundqvist will be there. I think Zibanejad will score. Buchnevich will score. I feel it. I feel Buchnevich popping one in the back of the net. Strom will put one in. But I think they lose the game in overtime. 4-3.
Ooh. I like him, Kevin. Jot him down.
They're jotted down.
There we go.
So, just a disclaimer for everyone who's listening before we end the podcast, we will not have a podcast for next week. We are taking a week off.
You said that.
I know, but...
He's,
I'm just letting everybody know.
Making it official. Making it official.
Fine, make it official.
We're making it official. We're not having a podcast next week. We're all pretty busy, and we just kind of want to, you know, just take a little bit of a break, but not the next week.
And it has nothing related to the JL wants to go to the game and have already
No, actually, I was already planning on having this week off anyways. It's just a very good coincidence. So.
Have your fun week off. I guess I'm forced to have a day off too. Don't force me to take my days off, JL.
Oh, Kevin. We know. I'm not even gonna say anything. So.
Well, boys, thanks for joining me this week. As always, Kevin with his high pitched yelling in the background. But I'll try that one again, Kevin. Boys, thanks for joining me this week. It was a little more somber show this week because of the recent tragedies. But just before we end, once again. You know, our thoughts and our hearts and our condolences go out to all those affected. And, you know, hopefully that the sports world can start healing sooner rather than later. Thank you for joining us this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We will be taking a week off. And as always, well, JL, you say those lovely three words to take us out this time, my friend.
Let's go, Rangers!
You've been listening to 4B Radio, powered by ForeverBlueShirts.com.